Early in his first book, titled Slow Getting Up, former Denver Bronco Nate Jackson writes, "Football was never about money to me. I want to get hit. I want to hit the ground hard and get up shaking myself off because I think I'm dead." Nate Jackson, I've heard a lot of players say they play football because they like to hit people, but you're saying that it was getting hit that you enjoyed. Explain, please.
Well, that particular passage referred to my year on the practice squad, where you practice, but you don't play in the games, and there is a definite difference between the two. At practice, it is physical, it is violent, but it lacks that full physicality of the game, and I wanted to prove that I was physical enough, tough enough, violent enough to take those hits in the game. Football practice is not fun. Football practice is monotonous, it's a bit repetitious, it's preceded by about 3 or 4 hours of meetings every day, and the game is really the cherry on top, not even the cherry on top, it's just the payoff, it's the reason why we go through all the practice, and when you're on the practice squad, you don't get to do any of that, and it's very frustrating. So by and large, all practice squad players want to prove themselves on game day.
In the pros, you had one coach you admired enormously, Mike Shanahan in Denver, and you had one whom you apparently detested, Eric Mangini, when you were briefly with Cleveland. Tell us a little bit about what made Shanahan great and Mangini awful.
I did spend the majority of my career with Coach Shanahan, and I believe that he's the model of the way a coach should be in the NFL as far as treating his players like men. If he was going to cut somebody or fire someone, he would bring them into the office himself, sit them down, and tell them why. He was hard on himself, just like he was hard on us. Oftentimes after a loss, he'd stand up in front of the team and say, "This one's on us. It was our fault."
Meaning the coaches?
Meaning the coaches, yeah. Hmm. Whereas Mangini really didn't do that. He kind of belittled his players. He would call them up in the middle of meetings and ask them to recite mantras that he had written around the room or recite arbitrary statistics that he required them to memorize. He filmed warm-ups and then would cue up the film of warm-ups and excoriate certain players for not trying hard enough during warm-ups, which I thought was crazy. But Eric Mangini had a very, very specific idea in mind of what he wanted to see at every single moment. And he was so rigid with those expectations that anything that fell on either side was wrong.
During the 2006 season, there occurred a moment when you permanently lost faith in the sports media. Tell us how that happened.
Well, our starting quarterback, Jake Plummer, was benched in favor of a high draft pick rookie, Jay Cutler. The previous season, we went to the AFC Championship. We were one game away from the Super Bowl. Jake Plummer was our undisputed leader. And then Jay Cutler was drafted, and that was a decision that Coach Shanahan made because he and Jake did not work well together. The media was clamoring for Jay to win the starting job, and Jake was benched when we were 7-4. And that's really rare to see a quarterback benched with a winning record after going to the AFC Championship the year before. After the game that we lost, to put us to 7-4, the media, who already knew that Jay was about to win the starting job, rushed to Jay's locker after the loss to ask him if he was ready for this new job. And they wanted to crown him right there with the grass stain still on Jake's butt, and so Jake could see it. And Jake was a good friend of mine, and it was really hard to see that and to see the excitement in the media's eyes at this man's misfortune.
A little later, you refer to ESPN's commentators as, quote, talking heads in clown suits. What prompted that?
The talking heads in clown suits. Well, they do have a tendency to wear some ridiculous suits with some ridiculously large Windsor knots, double, triple Windsor knots. And I just think that it's kind of a silly circus sometimes on ESPN with, you know, all these quarterbacks or former quarterbacks and former quarterback coaches and the coaches, and they're all doing the macho thing, and this is what you got to do, and he can't do that. He's got to do this, and he can't do that. There's too much time spent harping on mistakes and telling them this guy's not good enough, and this guy's got to get it done, and this guy's got to be fired and replaced, and this guy's the best. I think it's gotten a little out of control.
You also contend at one point that watching the NFL on TV dehumanizes the players, makes them, quote, pixelated video game characters to be bartered and traded. But the marriage with TV is what has made the NFL the most popular sport in the land. Would you undo that prosperous union?
No, not at all. It's a very tightly constructed package. It's very well produced, but it does dehumanize the player. For example, you watch a guy get really, really hit, and he's knocked out on the field. The camera pans away and cuts to the sideline and shows the head coach, and they have a 30-second talk about how the coach has really improved since last season, and they're not showing the guy who's lying on the ground. They get him up and they get him off, and you never see him. It's swept under the rug. And so the real consequences and the real violence and pain and all of the strategy and all that does not come through the television screen. It's really however the producers want to package the show.
Toward the end of the book, you write of the constant blah that follows an NFL career. Has your life been blah since 2008?
No, it hasn't. My life's been good. It's a more even-keeled life outside of the NFL. And constant blah might have been a poor choice of words because it's not a constant blah in the real world, but it's not the NFL high and low roller coaster that brings you way up with these huge rushes of adrenaline and these huge paychecks and these slaps on the back and then slaps you down with these moments of pain and doubt and confusion. That's what I wanted to highlight there.
Nate Jackson is the author of Slow Getting Up, a story of NFL survival from the bottom of the pile. The book is published by Harper. The author joined me from KUVO in Denver. Nate Jackson, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Music Emporium, for 45 years offering collectible boutique and vintage acoustic guitars. TheMusicEmporium.com. And Eton, offering the American Red Cross radio line a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel. Now at Radio Shack. This is NPR.